All right, and we are back with The Point Is. We're just talking with Ben Davenport, who's at the PowerShift Conference in Washington, D.C., and we're now joined in the studio by Ryan Libre. Ryan is a freelance photographer with over 7 years' experience in Asia, and he's published 12 books in addition to many magazines and newspaper feature stories. Ryan has held major solo exhibits in some of the best photo galleries in Japan and has done a photojournalist project sponsored by the Pulitzer Center. He's the founder of the non-governmental nonprofit organization Documentary Arts Asia, and he is a Chicoan, lived here for about 20 years, and took a little trip away and is just back for a couple of weeks. I'm happy to welcome you to The Point Is, Ryan Libre.
Thank you very much.
Ryan, let me ask you, first of all, what motivated you to go to Asia? How did you end up getting there?
Well, I had traveled to 30-plus countries before I ended up there, and it wasn't exactly a final destination, but it just kind of felt like home. And after the first time I went there, I've been back three times. So it's basically just been home ever since I showed up there.
And you're sort of headquartered in Chiang Mai in Thailand, is that right?
In Thailand. Chiang Mai.
Yep.
And then I also spent almost 4 years in Japan. And that's been almost all in Hokkaido. And for you, those of you who are not familiar with Hokkaido, it's basically like the Alaska of Japan. There's big mountains, volcanoes, eagles, salmons. You know, it's much more of that than skyscrapers.
Well, how did you end up staying there? You said you were traveling quite a bit and you just landed there and stayed. How'd you support yourself?
When I first went, it was to Thailand. And I had been working with the California Conservation Corps. And I was just living on farms and volunteering and orphanages and things like that. So I wasn't really spending hardly anything. So I was able to stay there the better part of a year. And then I'd come back to finish my degree in Chico. And then like 10 days later, someone had told me about an exchange program. So I was in a university in Thailand like 2 weeks after I'd come back to the States.
So it's interesting. I didn't know, but you just said you were involved in the California Conservation Corps. I do know that that is on the chopping block. I think the budget might have been gutted.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So give us a quick rundown of what it is and its importance.
The California Conservation Corps, I believe, is the oldest conservation organization in the world. And it's very large in terms of numbers compared to anything else, because there's small to large units in almost every town in California. And they do a large variety of work. I've done things from building trails to removing non-native species to helping out with wildlife refuge. And some have specialties. Some are based on wildlife firefighting, and some are just kind of jack of all trades is sort of what I did.
Well, I was in the Peace Corps, and so whenever I hear people in similar programs like that, it's always instantly kindred spirits. So, yeah. Kind of understand where you're coming from.
It's a good program.
Yeah. Should we support it if the budget is being slashed in that area?
I do. Yeah. I think it takes a lot of people who don't really know what they're going to, and gives them a pretty good direction, I think. I think most people find it quite a positive experience.
Well, let me ask you, you and I met just this week, really, and you were, you're offering a workshop on photojournalism. And before we really get into that, the workshop, and if people are listening are interested in learning about photojournalism, we're going to tell you about that soon. But what is it and why is it important? Why? I mean, I think of it as just go take some photos.
Well, the good thing about studying photography is everyone does it, and they're going to continue to do it. You know, sometimes foreign languages are something they're very important to, but you could spend a lot of time and then just not use it. But with photography, the time you put into it, you'll get it back, and it's going to be worth it just for that. I mean, media photography is an amazing way to tell stories, and there's so many important stories to be told now.
Well, you know, one of the things that really one of the reasons I'm really excited to be talking with you is that I was at your website and you created an organization, one of the founders of an organization in Chiang Mai, but you're based in Chiang Mai, called Documentary Arts Asia. And you, on your website, it says Documentary Arts Asia uses photography, film, audio, and narrative writings to tell the stories from Asia that need to be heard. So how do you take something like a photograph to tell a story? And what are some of the stories that you feel have needed to be told and you've been telling through your work?
Oh, good question. I've had a really good opportunity to take 10 books of 10 intentional communities in Thailand. That was a really amazing experience to just go there and live with them. And they invited me in as a part of their families. And some of them were an orphanage in the jungle that the children make all the decisions for. Some of them were spiritual communities. It was just a really amazing experience. There's also hill tribes, native people, who are fighting the government about land rights.
Mm-hmm.
The government says it's a national park, and they said it's our home, and just how to tell both stories, and it's just really amazing.
You know, it's interesting that you say that. When I was in the Peace Corps in Morocco, one of the some of the work that I did was I worked with a national park, and the park boundaries were pretty new, only, you know, a couple years old. And the boundaries cut directly across a nomadic tribal migration route. Mm. And I had to figure out how does each community, the conservation community and the traditional people, survive? How do they work together? So is that what you've encountered in your work?
Well, that's what we're sort of hoping for. What I've encountered is basically two sides saying, this is mine, no, this is mine.
Uh-huh. Right.
So hopefully this book and the story will, it sort of blends both stories, and I don't think really says either side has, you know, the whole story. So
mm-hmm.
hopefully something, some kind of compromise, or at least that sort of thinking could blossom out of this project.
So the project itself is a book of photographs.
I worked with a writer who's been visiting these communities for about 5 years. Her name is Om Sumisa, a wonderful Thai author. And so it was really good because I could just show up, and I had about maybe 10 days or so. But I had really good access, and they really invited me in because she knows them very well, and I spent a long time getting their trust. So if I were to do this by myself, it would have taken years to get the kind of trust that I was able to get.
So is the book used at all for sort of political? I'm just so taken with that phrase, telling the stories that need to be heard. And so these photos and these stories, are they affecting change in any positive way yet?
Well, these books are actually being printed right now.
Okay.
Yeah, so we have yet to see.
Uh-huh.
They will publish, I think, two at a time because it's actually 10 books. Mm-hmm. And they'll be published starting very soon, spread out over about a year.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very excited to see them in print and see what will happen from them.
And I'm assuming that people can access those books from your website. Is that right?
Yes, they're not all up right now.
Right.
But yes, definitely check the website, and you can see a lot of the photos. The text is still coming, but the photos say a lot.
Yeah, they do. I mean, I was on the website last night and today. They're just beautiful photos. The stories are quite amazing. If you want to go to check out this website, it's documentary-arts-asia.org. Some beautiful photos on there. So if you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Point Is, and we're talking with Ryan Libre, photojournalist, who is from Chico, and has spent the last 7 years in Asia documenting the stories by way of photographs. If you want to give us a call, if you have a question, if you have a comment, give us a call at 530-895-0167. And Ryan, I know some of the stories that you've been telling is the situation in Myanmar.
Yes.
What's going on there? What's the situation that we won't hear about on mainstream media, I assure you?
I had a very special opportunity that came from working on these other books. And part of my NGO, Documentary Arts Asia, I was teaching a 3-day workshop to Burmese activists and refugees who are in Thailand for about 1 year to study all they can and then go back and do activism on the inside, stuff that is impossible for anyone else to even consider doing and is still very risky for them. So I volunteered to teach them about photography for 3 days. And that led to getting invited to go to a special part of Burma called Kachin. Kachin is in the far north, in the foothills of the Himalayas, and the mountains are, I believe, over 5,000 meters tall. Mm. It's a really amazing place that not many people have got to go to. There's been a war for about 50 years. Now there's a ceasefire, but it's still very difficult to go there.
What are people fighting over in the middle of the Himalayas?
Well, culture mm-hmm. and jade and a lot of lumber.
Oh, okay.
So depending on who you ask, they'll say which one's more important, but they're all very important.
Mm-hmm.
So the Kachins are a culture minority, and they're also a religious minority. They're Christians, 90% Christians. And they had basically an independent country, autonomy, and then they were offered to join the Burmese Union, and they were offered all kinds of benefits for joining the Union. And they were told if it didn't work out for them, they could leave after 10 years. And after 10 years, they decided it was not working out for them. And that option was revoked by the Burmese military. So then they've been fighting basically ever since for that autonomy that they were promised.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my personal philosophy is never go into partnership with a junta. Not a good idea. Not a good idea. Well, I read a little bit about the Kachin Independence Army, the Kachin Independence Organization. Talk about who they are.
They are the basically the army of the Kachins. There is no democracy there now. So they're basically soldiers who have been fighting the war, and then now there's a ceasefire, and now they are trying to build up also more of a civil society, and they have civil servant schools, 2-year-long, and they have they're building up libraries, and they have their own TV station and radio, and they're building up all these things now. So now it's looking more like a not just a military organization.
Uh-huh.
So technically they call it the KIA and the KIO,
yep.
which is, but really I found it's sort of the same thing.
Well, it's always sort of a flag for me. I don't know if it's a red flag, a white flag, or a black flag. I don't know. But when you say army, when you connect it to, a group of people, you think guns and militancy. What are these people like?
Well, the first person that I met was in Thailand, the person who invited me there. He said, you know, we don't like war. You know, I hate war, but you know, our government's crazy. So we have to prepare. That's what he said to me, and that sort of struck something. And mm-hmm. then I thought I wanted to see more what was happening there.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, any big organization like that has different kinds of people in it. But I think that sums up a lot. I mean, they're basically, they live on higher elevations. They're very jovial, very easygoing people. But they are not free. So that's my basic understanding of why they're there with guns. And
well, what is that? What exactly do you mean by the government is crazy?
Well, that was his wording,
uh-huh.
but I think most people know, even though they don't know a lot about the situation in Burma, the government there is extremely unpredictable.
Uh-huh.
Nobody really knows what they're going to do or why they're going to do it. Even in other situations where there's very repressive government, it's more like you can almost know what they're going to do,
yeah.
or find some logic behind it. And what the Burmese junta is doing is just like nobody really knows what they're going to do or why they're going to do it or how severe it's going to be. There's just no way to know.
It was interesting. Well, it wasn't interesting. It was shocking and, sort of angering and disgusting. But when the hurricane hit Myanmar last year. I think it was about a year ago, or maybe a little bit more. Just about a year ago, I think. And international aid workers were not allowed in. Was that when you were in Kachin? Could you see the devastation, or was it too far away? Was it protected from the weather?
Yeah, Kachin is very far.
Okay.
Myanmar is actually a very large country. Not as large as, you know, the United States, mm-hmm. not as big as California, but it's actually quite large and stretches from the Himalayas to the tropics. And so it did not affect the area I was in at all.
Mm-hmm.
But I did hear some pretty interesting accounts while I was inside of Burma, and also from other people who have spent a lot of time there, that the situation was different, perhaps, than the international media made it out to be. That people generally got on with themselves pretty well, and that the Burmese and different organizations were helping out there.
Mm-hmm.
Not that they were in favor of the government denying outside aid, but just, I mean, basically, you know, they can build a house in a few days. And
mm-hmm.
so not that the situation was not severe and that people died, but the people from the inside seem to think most of it happened during the event. And
right.
So
yep.
That was just one opinion that I thought was interesting.
Well, let me, before we're getting really close to telling you about the workshop that's coming up, but let me ask you, I was on your website a lot last night and this morning, Documentary Arts Asia, and it's a really an interesting organization that you've created. What is it? Convince us that we want to help you out and support the work that you're doing. What are you doing there?
It's still a work in progress. This is started out just over a year ago now, and I'm looking for more people to do documentary arts. I'm looking for a lot more of everything. But the idea is there's a lot of documentation that happens in Asia. There's a lot of stories to be told, and one, there's a lot of stories that aren't being told. And the other thing is the ones that are being told are often by foreign journalists who come in, often for a short time, bring the photos back overseas and show them, even in the international media that doesn't have much relevance in Asia.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking to, I guess, basically broaden and deepen the documentary arts in Asia. So that means having galleries where people, foreigners or locals, can show their work in Asia, and also definitely getting a lot more Asians doing this kind of documentary stuff, that they can tell their own stories or stories of their neighbors that they think are important.
Why is telling stories so important?
I really like telling stories. My degree is in peace studies from Chico State, a special major, and I found I really like to just go somewhere and just listen and then just tell their story and not really have like this exactly is what needs to happen or something like that. Just sort of just listening and telling the story. And I think just by telling stories, we'll get people's interest, and then they can sort of decide, you know, maybe what's
mm-hmm.
needs to happen or what they would like to do or how they can help. But,
mm-hmm. And that, I mean, it seems to me that's what your culture is. It's the stories we tell each other.
Yeah.
You know, that's all it is, really.
Yeah.
We tell each other we are the most powerful nation in the world with the biggest, baddest army. And then we become that. So, yeah, stories to lose stories. Boy, to lose your cultural stories is quite tragic.
And I know the Kachin Independent Organization and Army is very interested in media right now. They've been fighting a battle with guns for about 50 years, and they have not lost, which is pretty amazing because they're way outnumbered and outarmed, but they have not really won complete autonomy either. So having the potential for them to tell their story in the media and sort of in a sense fight the battle online and on the radios and in the newspapers might give them a chance to put down their guns and maybe get their autonomy in a way that might not ever happen with guns, and even if it would be obviously much better if they could mm-hmm. do that through mm-hmm. So while I was there, and I went with a journalist, a writer, we taught a 7-day workshop to Kachin youth about writing and photography and online media and these things. And they're very, very interested, good students. And they're very excited about telling their stories to as many people as they can reach.
Well, you are offering, and I heard very generously on a sliding scale, you pay what you can afford, and you know, it sounds like not many people are going to be turned away. You're offering a photojournalism workshop in town.
Yes, I'm very excited about this. It will be on, the dates are Friday from, sorry, why don't you say the...
Well, let me pull it up.
Okay.
Let me pull it up. What will people learn?
The workshop is going to be, it's not basically a technical thing, although some of those things will be addressed. Basically, you can show up with any camera that you want and any skill level that you want, and no matter what camera and skill level, you're going to walk away with something. So it's going to be about storytelling, basically how to take photos and tell a story with them, and also how to make each one of those photos tell as much of a story as you can, which is also basically a very simple process, although it takes a lot of practice and a little bit of guidance to really understand. Basically thinking of a picture as a painting, and you're really responsible for, you know, garbage cans don't just show up in paintings, you know. So thinking of a photo that way, that we're really responsible for every inch or pixel that's here, and we really have to make the most of it to tell our story. And I guess you'll have to come to hear the rest of it and practice.
Well, it brings up go ahead and talk about when okay. and where and all that stuff. And then I have a question for you about that garbage can.
Okay. So it is Friday, March 6th. It'll be in the evening from 6 to 8:30. And then again, Saturday, March 7th from 9 to 4 p.m. And it will be at the Peace Center. And you can email me or call the Peace Center for a reservation. The fee is $5 to $50 sliding scale. No one will be turned away. But the seats are kind of limited. We don't want a huge group. So call or email.
So call early.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's already a few signed up. So I know seats are in demand. So, reserve your space pretty early. So, well, let me ask you about that garbage can.
Yes.
It's interesting to tell an honest story.
Yes.
Where do you draw that line between I want to tell an honest story and I want to create a prop that tells a story? What is okay. that? Where do you draw that line?
Well, basically, the point of taking the garbage can out is to make, and there's a million examples, of course, but the biggest problem with most photography is there's just too much in it. So you look at the photo and you're like, what are they saying here? Is this, you know, so that's basically the point of taking the garbage can out, is that you're telling a specific story just with words, you know. You don't want a bunch of words in there that aren't really adding anything to the story.
Mm-hmm.
So not that, and sometimes the garbage can is a part of the story and we want to put it there, but we just got to be more conscious of what we're putting in there.
Well, let me ask you this. There is a photograph that you took on your website at documentary-arts-asia.org. And there's a photograph of, it looks like a Kachin Army soldier, and he's standing around a fire. What does that picture tell you? What's the story that you are telling through that picture?
There's a story... One really important thing with the photograph that that also will be included in the workshop is thinking about context that we show our subjects with. Often beginning photographers just kind of bullseye the subject and snap, it's in there, okay. But really, there's two stories to be told. There's the subject, and then there's the context that the subject is in. So in this photo, you can see the high hills that are covered in frost, and you can tell it's above the tree line, and when people see this and I say Burma, they kind of scratch their head like, huh, I thought Burma was, you know, jungle and green.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to show that the landscape that these people are living in is a lot of it. And then just trying to show the simplicity. And
it looks cold there.
Yes, very, very cold. And I think you can also see something about their resources and the fact that there's a chair with some holes in it that's waiting to be burned for warmth next to him. So these are not, super high-tech, well-funded
mm-hmm.
soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and they're not losing.
They're not losing, yeah.
Well, I need to do a couple quick things, and then we're going to come back with Ryan Libre. Just we're coming to the top of the hour. I have to do just a couple things, and then we're going to announce one more time the opportunity to learn how to do photojournalism and really how you can find out more about Documentary Arts Asia. I want to let you know, though, first of all, right after The Point Is, of course, we're going to have Two Penny Opera, 11 o'clock to 1 p.m. with Tim Kemper and Lori Niles, sometimes John Dee. It's a great day to be alive in the land of Two Penny Opera. And then, of course, every Saturday we have DJ X with Chico Butter from 1:30 till 3 o'clock. Music created, recorded, and produced by musicians, poets, and creators in the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Tune in to hear featured studio, live, and rare selections from the largest, most comprehensive Northern California archives. And we're going to take a quick break. Don't go away.
Elizabeth Colbert, author and environmentalist, is speaking at Chico State as part of the On the Creek Lecture Series on Wednesday, March 11th at Laxon Auditorium. Elizabeth Colbert wrote the book Field Notes from a Catastrophe, Man, Nature, and Climate Change. She is considered one of the world's foremost authorities on global warming and has traveled extensively researching the subject. Get ticket information for Elizabeth Colbert by calling 898-6333 or go online to chicoperformances.com.
All right, we're back with The Point Is, and we're talking with Ryan Libre, who has been in Asia for the last 7 years or so doing some wonderful photography work. He's out there telling the stories that might not be told, and not only that, but teaching people how to tell their own stories through photography. He has created a non-governmental organization, or what we call domestically nonprofits, called Documentary Arts Asia. And it's on a shoestring budget. And so tell us about that. Are there any things that listeners can do to help the work, to continue the work that you're doing?
Yes. The main thing that I think Chicoans could help out with is donating digital cameras. They don't have to be the biggest high-tech thing, but they do have to work. So then I can distribute these cameras among people who have stories to be told, and I can train them, but they still need cameras to take photos with. So it's a very simple thing that people probably have one or two around, because I know they go outdated pretty fast these days.
Right, always need something new.
Yeah.
I know this is a shoestring operation, so where do you get some of your funding?
Well, for the Kachin project, I was very lucky to get supported by the Pulitzer Center on crisis reporting. It's out of Washington, D.C., and they give relatively small-scale grants out to people that are telling stories that they think really need to be heard. So I applied, and it was a bit of a process, but finally, they chose to support our project, and it was great because they support us with travel expenses, and they also work with us to get our stuff published to a broad as audience as possible.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
You can check out their website, which is PulitzerCenter.org, for a lot of really interesting stories from all over the world that you're not getting other places. And if you're interested in doing any kind of projects, then you could also check out them for. They have a fair amount of quite small grants for documentary projects.
Well, you know, one thing I didn't ask you about is if somebody has a digital camera and they want to offer it up, how can they get it to you?
They could drop it by the Peace Center in the next 2 weeks. That's all I'll be in town for. Or you could check on the Documentary Arts website, and there is a mailing address. Or you could also just email me first to find out where is the best place to get it to me. But if you're in Chico for the next 2 weeks, you could drop it by the Peace Center and just make sure to mention it's for Documentary Arts Asia.
And I think that address is 526 Broadway, just downtown. So you mentioned you're here for 2 more weeks. What are you doing? If you could give us the information again about the photojournalism workshop, and what else are you doing?
Okay, the photojournalism workshop to the Peace Center is Friday, March 6th from 6 to 8:30 p.m., and then also the same one, Saturday, March 7th from 9 to 4. And I'll also be doing a photo ride workshop called Focus on the Farmers. We will be going on bicycle with wheeled migration. And we will be visiting local Chico farms and getting to know the farmers and helping to tell their stories. And so it'll be a really fun ride. It'll be a photography workshop to learn how to take better photos. And it's going to be a small photo show to put the students and my photos on display somewhere in Chico to connect the local community with the local farmers.
And how do people find out about that? How can you join that one?
You can go to the wheeledmigration.org. Mm-hmm. I think is the best place to find that information.
Yeah. And there's a lot of bikers in this town.
Yeah. It's happening on the 14th. And it starts at 9 a.m. at the farmer's market.
Right on. Right on. Thanks, Ryan. Ryan Libre from Documentary Arts Asia. Thanks for coming in. I know you're here quick time visiting family, so thanks for taking the time to hang out with us today.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. So if you want to get involved, if you want to take that workshop on photojournalism, again, it's Friday and Saturday. You can contact Ryan directly. You can call the station right now, 895-0131, or you can check out the Chico Peace and Justice Center website at chico-peace.org to get more information and to reserve your spot. So I want to make sure that we properly thank all the folks that made this Hour of the Point Is possible. Second Hour of the Point is made possible by member contributions. Thanks so much. And by Turkey Tail Farm, a family farm providing Butte County with ecologically conscious agriculture. Turkey Tail Farm offers farm shares delivered to you each week. They include fresh meat, poultry, mushrooms, greens, and other seasonally harvested foods. And for more information, you can contact Turkey Tail Farm at 774-6270, or you can go to the web at www.turkeytailfarm.net. So, enjoying the rain while we still have it. You never know when it's going to go away. And until next time, peace out.